Harvey Wasserman's Green Power and Wellness Show, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
No, we're going to have a Solartopia. Okay, that was Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and the great David Burns, the Solartopia theme song. We're back for another hour with the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We have a great show today for you with the wonderful, magnificent Bernie Siegel. Bernie, you're on the line. Bernie, are you there?
Yes, I'm not only wonderful here, but I'm there.
Good to hear you. Good to hear from you. We're also joined by Vivian Simon in Boston. Vivian, are you with us?
I am.
You are. Okay, so Bernie Siegel. Bernie, you are the author of the Book of Miracles and God knows how many books, other books. How many books have you written anyway?
There's a total of 12 of all sorts.
All right, that's a good number, 12. Focusing primarily, of course, on the mind-body connection. Your most recent, I believe, is a Book of Miracles. Is that correct?
Yes, it's stories. I didn't write the whole book. I mean, people sent us stories of amazing things that have happened to them. And it's not just about mind and body, in a sense. It's always occupying the mind, but it's just what I would call no coincidences in their lives.
Well, what do you mean by no coincidences? Why are there no coincidences?
Well, the theme that really came out of the book after it was written, I mean, as I was rereading it and sharing it, was that when you choose to do what is good for others, you know, when you choose life, as the Bible tells us, not just what's good for me, amazing things happen. You end up in the right place at the right time. And one story I'm often sharing is, you are discharged from the armed forces on the West Coast. You're going to drive across country, make it a vacation, you know, like tourists visiting everything. And then you discover your car can't make it up hills. It just slows down and barely makes a hill. Mechanics don't know what's wrong with it when you bring it in. So you start driving at night to not cause a problem for other people. See?
Okay.
And in the middle of the night, when you're driving through Nevada, you come to a hill. So you pull over to the side because you notice a car behind you. Well, the car pulls up in front of you off the road, and you're getting a bit nervous. But the man walks over and says, "You have a Pontiac Le Mans. I'm one of the original designers. The problem you're having is with a hose that suctions gas to try to conserve fuel, but it's sucking too much." He goes under the hood, sticks a pencil in the tube, and they have a wonderful trip home. Now, what are the odds of meeting the designer of the car in the middle of the night in Nevada?
Well, I guess if it's a Book of Miracles, it's 100%.
Yeah. And again, to me, it's something I've learned, that consciousness is non-local. And so we create our future. I mean, Jung said that a long time ago, the future is unconsciously prepared long in advance. And so, again, I think when you're making these choices for the right reasons, then amazing things happen.
Well,
and that can include diseases going away, you know, as well as people showing up to help you with whatever's going on in your life.
Well, it's amazing and a miracle that you're on our show. We've been admirers of you for decades. You have a tremendous following for good reason. Can you, not to oversimplify, but we're at the top of the show, and I want to ask you, can you give us a thumbnail, just a made-for-radio kind of explanation of the core of your philosophy and of your work? I know you deal with cancer and other diseases,
yeah,
which we'll start talking about soon.
The thing that over the years, what it's come down to, it's almost like a one-liner, is love your life and love your body.
Well,
the other side of the coin is Monday morning. We have more heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and illnesses. That's not an accident. It's about how people feel about their life, their job, the traffic, whatever's going on. But if you get up in the morning loving your life and your body, you don't get mad at it for having something wrong, then your body does whatever it can to help you to heal and cure itself of any afflictions. Because your body is then getting a chemical message, so to speak, saying that you love life, and it then enhances healing versus living in fear. I mean, fear is to help protect you. So if a dog is chasing you, you run faster than you've ever run, jump over a fence you don't even think you could, you know, ever jump over, and that type of thing. But if you live in fear, it is suppressing the natural defense mechanisms against infections, and stress hormone levels are up and a whole host of things. So it's not good for your body to live in that state. But when you shift into love, then and laughter, I would add, too, then everything is enhanced. And you can test this by using actors. In other words, give them a script in which they're involved in a tragedy, and you see the negative effects it has on their body and their health. I mean, you even see this, you know, in New York on Broadway, that there are times, you know, famous performers can't get through the winter in a play because it's the part they're playing. It's draining them and making them vulnerable to the flu and other things. And somebody in working with Mel Brooks has no trouble getting through the winter, you know, laughing and enjoying the play and what they're doing. And again, if you draw their blood while they're performing, you see the differences.
Wow. Have you actually done that? Have you seen that done?
Yeah, a graduate student down at the University of South Florida did it many years ago. That was my first introduction to it. So I'm always saying to people, act and behave as if you're the person you want to be.
So, Bernie, one of the areas of your work that's been really groundbreaking was to help people understand how it is or why it is that some people do get totally overwhelmed by fear when they get a diagnosis or they have a terminal illness, and other people seem to be able to do exactly what you say, which is shift into a different kind of loving relationship with their body. I know you set up this amazing program on exceptional cancer patients.
Right.
Can you talk a little about what you learned there and what would be helpful for our listeners?
What I've learned and what I'd say is that the most significant public health problem on the planet is bringing up children who feel loved.
Wow.
So when you say, why does somebody deal with fear? Because they had my mother. Say, God is redirecting you. Something good will come of this. It used to drive me nuts as a kid. I mean, imagine being an unhappy teenager and say, Ma, I had a terrible day at school today. It was meant to be. God is redirecting you. Something good will come of this. And that was it, you know. You're no help. But she taught me that you don't know the future. And good things could come. The curse could become a blessing. Charcoal can turn into a diamond. So I began to have a different view of the future. See? I was also told to do what makes me happy. In other words, pay attention to my feelings. So I could make choices that were right for me, not ones that were imposed on me. And I often said to people at workshops, what mottos are you living by? And they said, wait a minute, you didn't ask us what mottos we're dying by. See, this is a quote. My mother's words were eating away at me and maybe gave me cancer. She dressed me in dark clothes so nobody would notice me, told me I embarrassed her and I was a failure. Mm. And the first red dress that woman ever bought was when she had cancer a second time. And her husband introduced her to my work. And then she said, you gave me permission to be the person I was meant to be. Now, that's the sad part. She shouldn't need permission. So, really, what I learned more than anything is how we're brought up has so much to do with our health. Addiction, self-destruction, suicide, all of these things. Because, again, if people are taking your life away by how they're treating you and what they're telling you, you know, your feeling is, well, what's the point of living? Or I might as well do all these things just to give myself a feeling, you know, that numbs me.
And in your workshops, how do you help people to do that?
By reparenting them, by loving them. And what I'm, and this, what really focused it for me, as crazy as it may sound, because I didn't realize I was doing it by offering all the support groups to people. Because, you see, the ones who didn't feel loved didn't show up for the support groups. Hmm. See, I'm not exceptional. And what if I do it wrong? What if I don't love enough? He wants me to draw a picture, and I'm not an artist. So they were afraid to come. But this one teenager said to me one day, "You're my CD." I said, "What are you talking about? I'm a CD." He said, "Yeah, you're my chosen dad."
Mm.
And boy, that really hit home for me.
So there's a great saying that I heard a long time ago. It's never too late to have a happy childhood.
Yeah. And so I say to people, "You want a father? I'll be your father." I mean, I don't care how old they are, if you know what I mean. That has nothing to do with it. It's somebody who will love them. And I always say, I didn't say like, I said love.
But so, Bernie, you're a doctor who works with cancer patients. How has this influenced or changed your view of the conventional treatment towards cancer?
This is part of why I do drawings. That I'm not trying to tell people what to do. Because, you see, somebody can say, "I hate vegetables. Can I have chemotherapy?" I don't make up these stories, you know, because he said the kids don't eat with us anymore, my wife doesn't like preparing it, and so fine, let me go through, you know, treatment instead of trying to cure myself with some alternative therapy. But what I say is, see, draw a picture of yourself. And some people will draw the operating room with God and the surgeon hugging them and everything's beautiful. And others, they're lying there in a black box with nobody near them, see? So what I do is then I say to them, you know, maybe you shouldn't have this surgery or whatever the treatment may be. And if they said, "No, I do want to go ahead," all right, maybe you need a new doctor. You know, we can look at those things. Or you have to reprogram yourself, and that can be done through imagery. That if you visualize yourself going through whatever frightens you, and coming out fine. You know, it's like I went to the hospital, I had surgery, I woke up, had a big meal, they discharged me the next day, everything's wonderful. Then by the time you show up a week later, you've had 20 or 30 operations with no problem. And your body doesn't know, you know, that it wasn't real, that it's an image. It's almost like auto-hypnotic. And so you do far better. And when I say draw a picture again a week later, it's gorgeous. I mean, you're surrounded by family, doctors, God's light is shining in the operating room. It's a healing place now. So people can accomplish that too. But again, they have to be willing to participate, what I call be a responsible participant. Take responsibility, participate in your health. Don't be a submissive sufferer, you know, a good patient that doesn't bother anybody but is not likely to survive. I call it survival behavior. You know, that there are personality qualities to people who live longer. I mean, I can't make people, well, only love makes you immortal, but I can't make your physical body immortal, but I can help you to exceed expectations. The word I use is potential, that you're not a statistic. You know, when somebody wins $250 million in the lottery, what the hell are their chances of winning? You know, one in God knows how many millions, but it happened. And the same is true confronting an illness. You know, you don't die because of a statistic. You give it your best shot, and let's see what happens. And when your body gets that message, then amazing things can happen. And that's part of what keeps me doing this for years.
Well, we're amazed and thrilled that you're on the show. This is the Green Power and Wellness Show. I'm Harvey Wasserman. We're talking with Dr. Bernie Siegel and Vivian Simon about mind-body connections and the power of love to heal the physical body. Bernie, have you had experience? Vivian asked about the work you do with cancer. Have you had experience where cancer has been affected merely by mental and spiritual meditation and relief?
Yeah. I've had, some television show from Japan was asking me to find these people. I don't keep track of everybody, if you know what I mean,
right,
who's ever come through my office or joined our group. But three people I think of, two who showed up, one said, she said, I want you to write up my case. I'm going to leave my troubles to God and heal myself of cancer. And I suggested that she have an operation and let God keep her well. And she was enraged at my lack of faith and walked out of the office. 7 years later, I'm giving a talk in New York, and this lady walks up and says, remember me? I said, I remember your face, but I don't remember the story. She said, I'm the one, you know, who said, I'm going to leave my troubles to God, because I had said to her, it's hard to be a saint. And I gave her a big hug and said, it's a pleasure to meet a saint. Her cancer was gone.
The another she never woman, had the operation?
Pardon?
She never had the operation?
No. Another woman in our office had had surgery, said a large pancreatic tumor, and everybody said, you know, there's nothing more we can do for you. So she went home supposedly to die, except about a month later she came back to the office for a checkup, and my partner opens the door of the examining room and yells, Bernie, come in here, you're interested in this stuff. So I walked in, I said, what is it? He said, her tumor is gone. I mean, this was so big, you know, you could feel it, if you know what I mean, like having a softball in your belly. And he said, it's gone. And I said to her, tell them how you did it. She said, you know, I left my troubles to God. And the last one I would share with you, I got a kick out of, because this was a man who was a retiring landscaper, about age 70, who developed an ulcer, which everybody thought was stress from his retirement. But it didn't heal, and then they biopsied it, and it was cancer. And he came to the office. I told him, we need to get him right in the hospital. He's been walking around with this for months. He said, you forgot something. What did I forget? It's springtime. I'm going to go home and make the world beautiful. So if I die, I leave a beautiful world. He came back a few weeks later. He said, I'm ready. We operate. I can't cure him. So that night in his room in the hospital, I said, John, you need more treatment. Chemotherapy, maybe radiation. I couldn't get the whole tumor out. He said, you forgot something. What'd I forget? It's still springtime. Going to go home, make the world beautiful. So when I die, I leave a beautiful world. 4 years later, and I put this in one of my books, John showed up in the office. I didn't think it was John. I thought he was dead. He never came back. And the nurse said to me, I said to the nurse, you got the wrong chart. We must have two people with the same name. She said, open the door. And I opened the door, and John said, I have a hernia from lifting boulders in my landscape. He became my teacher. I spent a lot of time with John, walking outdoors in nature, seeing the beauty of the world. At his 70th wedding anniversary, I made sure I showed up and gave a talk about what an amazing man he was. And he died at age 94 after his wife died.
So did he teach you how to lift boulders?
Yeah. Now, we have the pathology report. See, if a doctor was listening to this and said, oh, he probably never had it, or you got it all out of there, or, you know, we have the report. You know, you can read it and know that all the cancer wasn't removed. So what kept him alive? I'd say his body got the message, I'm not retiring. See, that's what's fascinating, too. There's a poem called Miss G, the poets, the songwriters. That's why I love classic country western. There's so much wisdom. It's like poetry put to music. But this one poem called Miss G by W.H. Auden has a line in it. A doctor examines a very lonely lady, finds cancer, comes home that night, says to his wife, cancer's a funny thing. It's like some hidden assassin waiting to strike at you. Childless women get it, and men when they retire, it's as if there had to be an outlet for their foiled creative fire. And I recited that once in front of a group of doctors, and the response was, just because it rhymes doesn't make it true. Well, you know, decades later, studies show loneliness affects the genes that control immune function. Just as laughter enhances survival in cancer patients, loneliness will speed it, you know, up their demise.
So do you ever write a prescription for people to get a dog?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I mean, that, again, studies have shown. There was a, I think it was USA Today this morning. It was about heart disease, and there were several questions. And one of them was, if you want to live longer and not have a heart attack, which pet should you have? You know, they list cat, dog, and a couple of others. And the answer was a dog. Now, a study in Australia showed if you had a heart attack and went home to a house with a dog, a year later, 5% of the people had died. If there was no dog in the house, 26% had died.
Holy cow.
So, you know, these are about the relationships and connections. And as part of what I try to talk about to people. You know, we mentioned loneliness, but women, you see, this is the other thing when you get too scientific. Women live longer than men with the same cancers. Why do you think that happens?
Vivian, you want to tell us that one?
Women tend to be more relational.
Yes. See, you're coming from your heart. An oncologist said, studying melanomas, it must be estrogen and progesterone are protecting the women. I said, there's another study. Married men live longer than single men with the same cancers, smoke as much, and have less lung cancer. So obviously the conclusion is sleeping with estrogen and progesterone is protecting them. You know, and then people laugh because that's absurd.
Well, it's actually it's sometimes the absurd appears to be the realistic reality here. We're with Bernie Siegel, Dr. Bernie Siegel, the great healer, and Vivian Simon. Vivian, you are running a support group for women who are in have some relationship with cancer. Can you explain what's going on there and tell us a bit about how Bernie's work may interface with yours?
I run a support group for women who have completed treatment and now are rebuilding their lives. We started off calling it a group for cancer survivors and changed the name to Rebuilding Lives so that the focus wasn't on the cancer. It was on moving forward and doing something wonderful with their lives and moving away from the cancer. And what's become clear is that the number one issue facing everybody wasn't, in fact, the cancer. It's the, at this point, it's the residual effect from the treatments. And so we're looking at ways to really rebuild health and rebuild immune systems, and it's all the things that Bernie's talking about. It has nothing to do anymore with technological advances in medicine. It has to do with, so what empowers you? What do you want to do that brings you joy in your life? How do you treat your body well now? It's hard when people are feeling really bad and they look really good and everyone has high expectations and they're starting to bring negative thoughts on themselves, that somehow they're to blame for it. And so really working through a lot of that blame and negative emotion towards yourself and finding a lot of compassion so that you can love your body back to health,
right,
which is what Bernie talks about.
I mean, one thing that I learned from Mother Teresa, just what you were saying, she was invited to an anti-war rally, and she said, I will not attend, but if you ever have a peace rally, call me. And when you focus on the disease, you know, or side effects, you're empowering the enemy. But when you focus on healing your life, it's very different. And that's why, again, bring up animals. You know, they can, I don't know of any animal who would say, oh, I lost my hair, I'm not going out today. Or they amputated my leg, so, you know, I better just stay hidden in the corner. I mean, you know, that how we see ourselves. And I know a veterinarian who said it very nicely. She said, I couldn't fall asleep the night before my mastectomy, thinking of my body and my deformity. And then she said, I suddenly remembered all the animals I operate on, amputating legs, jaws. And they wake up and they lick their owner's faces. They know they're here to love and be loved and teach us a few things. So, you know, I try to get that across to people, that you can be complete and still have a part of your body missing. And again, part of what you were saying, from various philosophers and so forth, that when you love your fate and are going through hell and ask, what can I learn from this? Then it changes everything. See, then the curse becomes the blessing. See, hunger leads you to get something to eat. So if you look at your discomfort, what am I feeling? Then you might say, all right, what do I need to nourish myself in my life? Rather than get depressed about being depressed, you say, okay, how do I resolve this? And it can be, again, asking for help and for people and a whole, you know, to come and be with you and a whole host of things. And for women, particularly, I often, again, in workshops say, how would you introduce yourself to God? See, one woman said, I have 9 children. I can't die till they're all married and out of the house. When did she die? When the last child left home. Now, that really struck me because it was many years later. How did she survive? What kept the cancer from, you know, killing her in all those years? So I want the women to live authentic lives. You know, she could have been her 10th child, if you know what I mean, and said, okay, now what do I do for me? And for them to feel empowered and not just be mama. And for the men not to be the wage earner, because I know guys who say, there's no point in living, I can't work anymore, and their family is sitting in the room. So I always say, give people responsibility for things. Keep up the relationships and the connection. And empower yourself. If you don't want to do something, say no. I mean, be good to yourself and how you use your lifetime.
Okay, we are on. We're about to take a break here with the great Bernie Siegel, Dr. Bernie Siegel, Love and Miracles, and healing with the mind-body-spirit connection, and Vivian Simon, who runs the Cancer Workshop and is my co-host. You're going to hear Pete Seeger coming in. Oh, actually, we're going to do Dana Lyons here of Cows with Guns fame. We're at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. I am Harvey Wasserman, and we will be back after the break to talk more with Bernie Siegel and Vivian Simon.
Suburbia, mudslide, traffic jam, road rage, asthma, famine, leukemia. It's time to get a better plan. Solartopia is home sweet home. That's the future for me. Green powered energy, windmills, hydrogen, photovoltaic cells.
Dana Lyons, a wonderful, truly great Dana Lyons. Cows with Guns is his mega hit. Over 2 million hits, actually, on YouTube. Look it up. Dana Lyons, L-Y-O-N-S. Cows with Guns. We are with the wonderful Bernie Siegel and Vivian Simon. Bernie's been talking to us about the mind-body-spirit connection to healing. I want to read something from your wonderful website here, Bernie. Bernie, BERNIESIEGELMD.com. Question for Bernie. Dear Bernie, we need to talk. This is not me. This is someone writing in. I met you about 10 years ago when you were speaking in East Lansing, Michigan. I was in deep trouble back then, and you told me to just enjoy the rest of my life. I followed that advice in my own way. My stage 4 incurable disease is now non-existent. I did complete nursing school in the midst of a bone marrow transplant, and now love my life as a hospice nurse. If I were a celebrity, Hollywood would be clamoring for movie rights for my story. It's so good. You are at the beginning of my change in direction and continue to be in my thoughts. Thank you. Bernie, what's your answer?
Oh, well, yes. I have letters that end with, I was told I had 2 months to live, so I bought a dog, put it in a backyard wildlife habitat, you know, goes on and on. The letter ends with, I didn't die, and I'm so busy, I'm killing myself. How do I go from here? I mean, you know, again, it's the rebirthing. You see, it's you know, these are, as I said, age-old messages. The country western song has this line, let your heart make up your mind. See, that's what she did. And what a different message to her body. And
well,
I was just reading something in Judaism when the Jews were thrown out of Egypt and, you know, crossing the desert for 40 years, and God says, build a tabernacle out of all the things that you have, and each person contributes something. Well, what, you know, so God has asked, well, what should people give? And God said, whatever their heart desires. And when I read that, it was like, wow. You know, these are age-old messages. And so whether it's Buddhism, Jesus, or a whole host of things, it's easy for me to give a lecture based on all the things that they've taught, because they're telling us how to heal our lives and not to wait for a disaster to wake you up. But that's what she's saying. She created a new person, and her body got the message that she loves life and what she's doing, and so the disease disappears. Let me summarize it in this. Just thought of it. Solzhenitsyn, the Russian author, had cancer. Wrote a book, Cancer Ward. I'm reading it. I come to a page where it says one of the men walks into the ward and says, look, I found this book in the medical library. It says here there are cases of self-induced healing, not recovery through treatment, but actual healing. See? And it was as though self-induced healing flooded out of the great open book like a rainbow-colored butterfly, and they all held up their foreheads and cheeks for its healing touch as it flew past. When I read that, I thought, wow, he intuitively understands what I'm trying to tell people. First of all, doctors never use the term self-induced healing. You get well when you're not supposed to. You've had a spontaneous remission. Well, what the hell do you learn from a spontaneous remission? Nothing. Or what do you learn from a miracle? Hey, that's part of why I wrote a book. You can learn from what they had happen. But when he uses a term self-induced, it means you had something to do with it. And the rainbow-colored butterfly, the butterfly is a symbol of transformation. The rainbow is your life in order, because every color, literally, when you draw pictures, represents an emotion. So you get your life in order, and self-induced healing can occur at that time. But doctors don't ask people. See, I have so many people come in our group say, saw the doctor today, he said, I'm doing very well, keep up whatever I'm doing. Why didn't he say, what are you doing? Let me tell other patients, you see. We need to learn from success. And again, to understand, it's not about failing. Death is not a failure. You don't lose the battle if you die. But it's, hey, let me give it a shot. Let me see what I can accomplish. What is my potential? So, you know, you learn from those people.
Do we have actual studies on how often what the medical profession calls spontaneous remission occurs?
No, because we rarely study success, which is something we need to do. I mean, I was called crazy at the hospital. And I started doing everything from music in the operating room to talking to people under anesthesia. It was all seen as nuts. What is he doing? But when my patients did well, everybody started doing what I was doing. Because they always said, nobody's against success. It's just our minds are not programmed properly. See, we focus on disease. This is an ad from New England Journal of Medicine. I'm depressed, unable to cope. I went to see my physician. I said, you've got to help me. He prescribed an antidepressant. I feel better now. I wrote them and the pharmaceutical company. I said, you know, if my family's killed in a crash, if I learn I have cancer, I'm depressed, can't the doctor say, tell me what's going on in your life? Why are you feeling this way? I said, put that line in, and then they canceled the ad. But you see, that's the problem. Again, we're focusing on the disease, and I'm not against technology. Don't get me wrong. You know, I was a surgeon, and so I helped people. But it is about also focusing on the experience. Here's another very simple way of helping people. Whatever their diagnosis is, and you might do this with your women's group, ask them, what are you experiencing? How would you describe what you're going through in your life right now? And as you go around the room, even though they're all there with the same problem, you'll get a different answer from each person. And some will say it's a gift, a blessing, a wake-up call because it's redirected their life. Others will say it's draining, it's pressure, it's confusion, it's failure. And then say, how do those words fit your life? And boy, I'm telling you, some eyes will bulge and they say, thank you. Because what I want them to do is eliminate what's making them feel like a failure. What's causing the pressure? What's draining you? You see, so again, the problem becomes part of the therapy. And I don't know how I came upon asking people that question. But again, it's because I didn't want to just treat a disease. See, we're trained as doctors to say, what's your chief complaint? You say, I have a headache. But I would say to people, how may I help you? Because one of my patients said to me, I need to know how to live between office visits. So how can I help you? Then I would hear different things. I literally cured a lady of a migraine headache because I was visiting a neurologist friend of mine to ask him some things. And I was told by the nurse, I just put a woman in the next room waiting for transportation to the hospital. She's had a migraine headache for a week, so please just keep your voice down. I went into the room, and I said, let me do some guided imagery with you. What does your headache feel like? She said, it's pressure. I said, all right, and I went through a routine with her to alleviate the pressure. Now, she's not my patient, so I didn't want to say what pressure is going on in your life, because I didn't feel it was appropriate. But I dealt with the pressure and helped her. And then I left the room and was sitting again in the office of my friend. And the nurse came in and said, she's going home. It's her marriage. The headache is gone. She knows what she needs to straighten out in her life. And instead of ending up in the hospital, she's going home free of the headache to talk to her husband. And that's the thing that, as I say, impressed me. Even the word failure from a woman who was screaming at her plastic surgeon after having cancer surgery. And he called me. He said, this lady's crazy. I mean, the incision is on her upper thigh. Nobody knows she's had an operation. Something's going wrong. Could you talk to her? So when she came in, I said, what are you going through? Failure. I said, how does it fit your life? Well, my body failed. I said, that's not my question. How does failure fit your life? Oh, my parents committed suicide when I was a child. That must have been a failure as a child. And this is a woman who feared relationships. She didn't want to get hurt again. But that changed her life. That simple visit and my asking her that question put her on a whole new course in her life. Out there, you know, transforming herself and not being afraid of people and learning to love herself. I often say to people, get your baby pictures out and put them up around your house and where you work, and especially in the hospital. So when people come in and say, who's the cute kid? You can say, it's me. You know, so they treat you as a person, and that you also work at loving yourself.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I call them little shrines throughout the house with mottos to live by and photographs to make you feel loved.
Beautiful. We're on the Silvertopia Green Power and Wellness Show with Bernie Siegel and Vivian Simon, talking about healing, miracles, health, the mind, body, and spirit connections. Vivian is running a support group for women recovering from cancer.
Bernie, you are just such a treasure.
Thanks.
Can you
tell
a little bit about your own story, how you went from being a very mind-centered surgeon to someone who really moved into his heart to begin to understand the true nature of healing?
I was thinking of that earlier today, but I have to get a story out of my head. My father's name was Simon, and I'm always rescuing. I think it's part of why I became a doctor. I won't get into past lives, but I'm always rescuing things. Our house broke all kinds of laws with all the various exotic creatures we were always rescuing, you know, and veterinarians were giving us. But at the animal shelter, they know names of my relatives. And so I'll walk in and say, oh, what's that dog's name? And they say, Simon. So I took him home. I walked in a few months ago. Well, what's that kitten's name? Simon.
They got your number.
Yeah, so I now do not reveal any information to the animal shelter because they know if they name it after one of my family, I'll take it home with me. But what got me into this, as a child, I was an artist. I loved art. And I thought, and I had no idea growing up in Brooklyn, New York, that there were artists like Picasso and, you know, Rembrandt, and you could paint the picture and sell it. So to me, the art was really a hobby, you know, a way of doing beautiful things, but not a way of earning a living. And I thought, you have good hands, what can you do? And I thought, gee, I could be a surgeon and use them. And you like people, you like fixing things, you have an interest in science. So I thought, you know, being a doctor would put all that together and I could enjoy a profession. The pain is that, and I wrote to many deans at medical schools after they trained me, I said, you made me a wonderful technician, but I don't know how to take care of myself, and I don't know how to take care of my patients. You know, we're not trained to deal with loss. You rarely ever hear the word death in the hospital. You know, people pass, fade, fail, go to heaven. I mean, all kinds of bizarre expressions, kick the bucket, whatever. But, you know, nobody ever says, oh, your patient died. And that was painful for me because I grew up, as I say, expressing feelings and not hiding them. And that's when I started attending workshops to help me take care of my patients in a different way. you know, when you couldn't mechanically cure something. And that's where the patient of mine said to me, I need to know how to live between office visits. Because I was at a meeting that I thought was for doctors by Dr. Carl Simonton years ago on imagery, and he wrote a book, Getting Well Again. And I showed up at this meeting. 125 people are in the room. I'm the only MD there. Now, that blew my mind. In the whole state of Connecticut, that not one other doctor showed up. And, you know, again, it told me how inadequate our training was. And that session and that woman, a patient of mine, saying that to me changed me. That's when I sent out 100 letters saying, hey, you want to live a longer, better life, come to a meeting. I expected hundreds of people to show up. I mean, I sent this to our patients, and instead a dozen women showed up. And I realized, you don't know your patients. You don't know their will to live. And again, I got a lot of criticism because I asked questions like, what's going on in your life? What's happened last year or two in your life? What does the illness mean to you? And doctors would yell at me and say, you're blaming your patients. No, but what could make us vulnerable? You know, a loved one dies. Something else happens. You lose your job. You have to move across country and you're lonely. All these things can make you vulnerable. So it wasn't blaming people. As I said, I didn't grow up with the guilt, shame, and blame that the majority of the world did. So I didn't understand when I would just ask these questions, thinking, hey, I was loved. I'm sure everybody else was. But what you realize is, and I know today, 70% of high school students have contemplated suicide. And when you ask them for homework, and I do these kinds of things, write a suicide note and write a note why you're lovable. The suicide pile is 3 to 5 times higher than the love note. And then the kids start talking to each other about their troubles, and the suicide rate goes down. But I had to wake up to the fact that everybody didn't have your parents and your grandparents, you know, to feel loved, even if they didn't, again, like what I was doing. I knew I could always go home and that they would love me. And what a difference. Well, let me give you a statistic. Harvard, the study of Harvard students, while they were at college, did your parents love you? If they said yes, 35 years later, 1 out of 4 had suffered a major illness. If they said no, 98% had.
Jeez.
So again, I always say information is not what people need. I don't get up and lecture and say, this is what you should eat, you should exercise, you should this, meditate. I say, what you need to do is love yourself. Then they get the information and start taking care of themselves.
There was actually a study done. I had the great honor to be arrested with Dr. Benjamin Spock at the Pentagon in 1980. And there was a study done of his, in the aftermath of his, well, it's still in print, obviously, his baby and child care book. Mm. And they when it came out, it was such a breakthrough book. I mean, he talked about actually hugging children, but yeah. Prior to that, people were putting children in Skinner boxes and not responding to them. And so somebody did a survey of, I think it was 400 children, and they found that of all the indicators for success or failure, divorced parents, poverty, illness, all these other things, the one thing that was the most reliable indicator for success was whether or not the children were physically hugged and given physical affection when they were growing up.
Well, let me tell you something. Another story. I need an autobiography also. My mother was quite sick and told not to become pregnant, but she did her mother a favor and became pregnant. And it was a disastrous. When I listened to it as an adult, her care was terrible. But she went into the hospital in a delayed labor many weeks past the due date, was in labor for days. As she said to me, I lay there screaming and tearing up the sheets. And then the doctor came in and said, you can't survive a cesarean section. We have to get this kid out. And they pulled you out. And then she said, and I didn't learn this till I was an adult, because there are no pictures in the album, my family album, except of covered carriages. She said, they didn't hand me a child. They handed me a purple melon. Those are her exact words. And I said, and she said, we wrapped you in a kerchief when we were allowed to take you home from the hospital to hide you and then put you in a carriage and covered it behind the house so nobody would be upset. I said, why am I not a drug addict or an alcoholic then if nobody was touching me? Or even could have died of an infection, because the orphanages in the 1800s, kids didn't survive because nobody touched them thinking they were spreading infections. But my mother said, oh, my mother took you. And I said, and what happened? She said she poured oil all over your body every few hours and pushed everything back where it belonged. And when I heard that, I realized, here I am getting a massage 4 and 5 times a day from somebody who loves me. And that made my life. I mean it. And the other is that those body memories are stored. Number one, there are studies that show if you massage a newborn, it gains weight and the brain develops faster than the kid fed the same amount but not touched. And the other was that, I don't know, about 40 or more years later, for the first time, I got a massage from a woman massage therapist. Because the guy who was supposed to massage me, it was his wife, and he was busy massaging my wife, and he asked if it's okay. I said, fine, let your wife come in. I had shaved my head, and this had a lot to do with what needed to be uncovered and had nothing to do with cancer patients, but what needed to come out from within me. But I didn't understand that, so I ended up shaving my head, which didn't, well, it helped me because people knew I was nuts in those days, shaving your head. This is 30, 40 years ago. But she massaged me with oil on my bare scalp. I opened my eyes. The room is filled with people. I said, what the hell is going on here? I'm here for a massage. What are you all staring at? And they said, we thought you had a heart attack or a stroke. And I know why, because I went back to being the infant from the touch of a woman's hand. And I told them that, you know, but it scared the wits out of them. But it taught me, as transplant surgery does now, that our memories are stored within us. So, you know, it's not an accident at times which organ gets a disease. You know, our personality, our life experience, all those participate. And on the positive side, I have to say, there was an article in the paper maybe 4 months or so ago about premature twins who were born in the intensive care unit. One of them is dying. And they said to the mother, here, if you want to hold the baby because it's dying, go ahead. She put it against her bare breasts and her chest to warm it and hold it. And the baby turned its head and started sucking on her nipple and came back to life. Now,
I read that story. It's actually even more remarkable. Yeah. They didn't want her to touch the baby, and she insisted. They said the baby...
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well,
she said the baby was practically
dead. Since it was dying, they then allowed her to touch it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. We are on the Soatopia Green Wellness and Power Show with Bernie Siegel and Vivian Simon talking about healing and miracles. Next week we'll be talking about, at the other end of the spectrum, we're going to be talking about genetically modified food. Bernie, I hope you'll come back with us again someday. You're just a tremendous...
Boy, the time flew by.
Time does fly by. It's truly astounding. And having just watched Captain
America
for the sixth time,
one last sentence. I'd say life is a miracle. That we have to remember the mechanisms of survival are built into us. You know, a tree doesn't bleed to death when you cut the branch off. I don't bleed to death when I cut my finger. Bacteria resist antibiotics. Viruses resist, you know, vaccines. The mechanisms are built into all living things, and we need to keep turning them on to help us survive.
Bernie, for people who have cancer and would like to have you analyze one of their drawings, could you give the website?
Oh, yeah, Bernie Siegel, S-I-E-G-E-L, MD.com. And there also, you know, shows where the ECAP website is and so forth. And the
what is ECAP, Bernie? Can you tell us, please?
Pardon? ECAP stands for Exceptional Cancer Patients.
What's that program? What's that involved?
Well, they do training, you know, support groups. It's what I started like 30 or more years ago, and now the office is out in Pennsylvania.
And what do people, is it a seminar? Do people come, or how does it work?
Well, they do have retreats where people will come there. And that schedule, you know, as I say, if they go to my website, they can also click on the ECAP website to see those dates and what they're doing, yeah.
Well, can you tell us what kind of success have you had?
In what?
Treating cancer. I mean, most people in this country, when they are told they have cancer, or they, a friend is told they assume that means a death sentence.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, the success, I'm known all around the world now. It just blows my mind. My books are in every language you can think of. I get a kick when they send me copies of something from, you know, I don't...
Yeah, you got to read it. Oh, by the way,
yeah,
I wrote it.
but you see, it obviously is touching the people, if you know what I mean, that what I'm giving them, as I said, is survival behavior. What do you need to do to give you the best, you know, potential? So, you know, it's like a coach. That's the word I love. I coach people. If they show up for practice, then things happen. You know, if you're going out for a baseball team and you don't listen to the coach and never show up for practice, you're not going to be a star. But if you show up, rehearse, practice, then things happen.
Well, Bernie, we are Bernie Siegel, MD. That's your website. We are just about out of time. Vivian Simon, anything to add real quick?
No, just that I had one of my drawings done by Bernie, and it was fantastic. So I encourage everybody else to do it.
Oh,
thank
wonderful.
You.
Bernie, I hope you'll join us again. You've been a tremendous guest. We've been at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. I'm Harvey Wasserman. Honored to have been in the presence of the great Dr. Bernie Siegel, talking about the mind-body connection. Next week, it'll be genetically modified food, and we'll continue on our route to Solartopia. Thank you, everyone, for listening in, and we'll talk to you next week.
We needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.